Welcome back to the Garden with Joey and Holly radio show. Tiger Pelafox moments away, but first, a message from Simple Grow.
Are you worrying about your plant growth? Provide your plants with what they need to grow their potential. Simple Grow offers 100% organic worm castings at simplegrow.com. Unlike other worm casting products, when you order from Simple Grow, you're getting 100% worm casting, not filler plus castings. Promote ideal soil structure and aeration with Simple Grow all-natural and odor-free worm castings. There's only one ingredient, worm castings. No chemicals or additives will seep into your food, and it doesn't smell like other fertilizers for indoor and outdoor use
You can use it anywhere.
Or by the bag, bundle, ton, or truckload. Check what Simple Grow 100% worm castings can do for your plants in order today at simplegrow.com.
Well, Holly, let's go to the Proclamation Hotline, brought to you by Proclamation Goods, and bring in our guest for this week.
Tiger Pelafox is one of the three hosts of Garden America Talk Radio. He grew up in San Diego, running around his family's nursery. He hosts and produces a local television segment named Eco Revolution that focuses on green products, events, people, or businesses. Tiger specializes in irrigation systems and creating edible landscapes. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you guys very much. I'm happy to be here.
We are happy to have you, and thank you for taking time out of your day to join us on the program and our listeners.
All right. Let's get started, huh?
We're getting into the summer months, and we want to save water. Water retention is important. What are some of your best water-saving garden tips?
Well, being here in California, we are, I think, are probably under the most strict guidelines when it comes to watering. So we really focus on being effective with our watering. And I think that a lot of people make the mistake of, like, you know, saying, oh, well, you're watering, well, that's just always wasting. And it's not so much you're wasting water, you want to be effective when using it. And so by means of being effective, it's how you water your landscape, whether it's your lawn, whether it's your plants, you know, whether it's your fruit trees, whatever it is, being effective. So understanding what best suits those landscapes for the water that they're going to need. As an example, if you have a lawn and it's a flat surface, you can water that with pop-up sprinklers, and you can water them for 7 or 8 minutes, and that's great. That's wonderful. No big deal there. But if that lawn is sloped at all, and you water for 7 or 8 minutes, a lot of that water could be running off into the storm drain, and you got to be much more careful with that watering. So you might want to change the sprinkler heads to something like an MP rotator, which is a low flow sprinkler head, or put multiple start times on your irrigation timer, which means that you might want to start that time at maybe 1 a.m., run it for a couple minutes, and then again at 3 a.m. and run it for a couple more minutes, and then again at 6 a.m. and run it for a couple more minutes. So you got 6 to 7 minutes of watering, which you would normally do on a regular basis on a flat lawn, but you're doing it over a period of time, so it gives it a chance to absorb in that landscape. Now, when it comes to plants, whether it be a drip or pop-up sprayers or a soaker system, you want to make sure that you're just soaking the ground so that way the roots get the water and you're not wasting water in areas that maybe don't have landscape.
Now, you spoke about the lawn and watering in the middle of the night. Is that because we've heard stories of, oh, you only water during, is that so the water can absorb and we're not worrying about a lot of the evaporations, and especially in the Southern California area where it's just hot all the time?
Yeah, and you know what? I might be talking a little bit regional. In Southern California here and a lot of these dry areas, we don't mind watering at 10 p.m., midnight, because we don't have the disease issues that a lot of people do in the South or maybe in the Midwest, where they got high humidity issues, where they get mold and different fungal issues in their lawns, right? In this, in Southern California, we can water our lawns at 10 p.m., and we know it's going to dry the next day and not create a disease environment. Now, if you do live in the South or a high humidity area, you do want to water something right before the sunrise, so that way you can maximize the absorption of water. But you also want to make sure that it evaporates when the sun comes up. So, yeah, you got to be a little bit regional when you come to times of watering, what time you water. But here in Southern California, I can say we can water at night, and it'll absorb. It'll stay in the soil. The plants will get a chance to absorb it, and we don't have the same things like rust or brown spot or, you know, sooty mold that, you know, some of the other areas have.
Right. Now, you are one of the three hosts of Garden America Talk Radio Show, heard on Biz Talk Radio Weekly. You, John Bagnowski, Brian Main. How did all three of you wind up getting together and doing this? And how long have you been doing Garden America on Biz Talk Radio?
Yeah, so Brian Main and John Bagnasco have been doing the program for a number of years. Before it was Garden America, it was a program called Garden Compass, and even before that, it was another program. You know, there was a couple, Sharon and Bruce Osakala, that were also involved with the program at that time. When Sharon and Bruce retired, I think it was maybe, more than, 7 years ago, I got the opportunity to join the program. In the program of Garden America, we try to focus on real garden habits, real garden techniques. I'm sure you guys have noticed in the market, there's a lot of flipping or HGTV programming
right. Yep.
that kind of leans to gardening, and that people think they can make things happen overnight or they can kind of make things flower within a small time frame. And us gardeners kind of know that that's not really the case. And so we kind of tried to create a program that would show people the real effort behind gardening and what it really takes. And so I got involved because owning a family nursery here in San Diego, I have a background in horticulture, but at the same time in landscaping. As you mentioned before, my specialty is in irrigation, where I really can teach people how to effectively use irrigation. And John's specialty is in plants, plant knowledge, varieties, planting techniques. And then Brian, we like to label him as our color commentary.
Okay.
He's a great guy that is our radio focus. And he brings the layman terms into what John and I are talking about. But it's what we need, right? Because
right.
not everybody out there is an expert in gardening and, knows what I'm talking about when I'm mentioning an echium plant or an allium or, sansevieria or anything like that. But – Brian brings it down into terms where people can understand it that are just the home gardener. And that's honestly what we want to cater to. We want to boost gardening as an overall topic. And in the past few COVID years, we've noticed that gardening has boosted. So why not embrace the new members of our community and get them to be successful? Because a successful gardener is someone that's going to garden for the future. Nobody just gardens for today. We all garden for tomorrow.
And I noticed John is big on his roses. He loves his roses.
Yes, he loves his roses, right?
So speaking about the COVID times and the pandemic, now your family owns a garden center or a nursery. Now thinking about pre-pandemic versus now, comparatively, what are some of the changes that you have seen, whether it be buying habits or increase in buying habits or trends or anything like that?
So pre-pandemic versus now, I would almost say that we are at pre-pandemic levels. So we are back now to pre-pandemic levels. But before this, the past couple of years, we've been just a huge surge in gardening. And whether it's been vegetables or houseplants or trees or shrubs or soil or pots, it's almost like we couldn't ever keep anything in stock because people were just so interested in the idea of gardening. And we live in San Diego, and our garden center is in San Diego, where we have a mix of small homes and also apartments and also large properties. And so people would come in and buy containers. People would come in and buy 20 fruit trees. And people would come in and buy just small little flowers for their beds. So in terms of, what's been happening in a trend, houseplants have been a number one trend across the board. That was pre-pandemic into now. The houseplant focus, the houseplant rave is still going on. And I think we see that by all the varieties of houseplants that are out there that are being introduced. And I think we see that by the amazing dollars that are put on particular varieties. You know, when you look at a, you know, variety of philodendron or some, you know, different pothos or different ficuses, and you're seeing them go for, you know, $300-$400 for a 4-inch plant. You're like, oh my gosh, that's I wish I could get that back in the day when I had 40 of them.
Right.
But you know, so houseplants are definitely driving a trend. Edible gardens have been a hot topic pre-pandemic, and I will say, and it's I don't mean to be gloom or doom, but as we move into a money-pinching era where I think some people are going to be looking towards on how to save that money in their home, edibles will be another hot topic where, you know, people will be growing their own produce. It's very easy to grow your own lettuce, grow your own tomato, grow your own vegetables and produce. So, you know, that will be another thing that will continue to grow, I feel. But the benefit of that is that we get such a cool variety of vegetables. I mean, the variety of tomatoes, the variety of peppers, the varieties of lettuces out there on the market today, I it's so amazing because they are so flavorful. They grow so well in different environments. And, you know, I feel bad for the people 30, 40 years ago that were, you know, with the limited selection. But what we have now is just amazing. I mean, you can have a cherry tomato that just tastes like sugar, and, you know, your kids would think it's a dessert. So there's a lot of edibles out there on the market. And then the last thing is just the idea of what we started the program with, in the sense of a little bit more water saving or more local, more native landscapes. No matter where you're at, whether you're trying to save water or not, I think people are moving towards that native landscape look, just because the ecosystem, the environment that you live in, they're trying to embrace it versus to fight against it. You know, you see less people trying to force varieties of plants into their landscape and just working with the cool native plants that they have wherever they may live.
That's awesome. So right now we are talking with Tiger Palafox. He is one of the three hosts of Garden America Talk Radio.
So let me ask you this. Some people may need a lot of space for fruit trees or fruit producing plants. Is that true? And are there some that you would recommend that take up less space for fruit trees or fruit producing plants?
So let's start off with fruit trees. A lot of people don't know this, but fruit trees like stone fruits, apples, nectarines, plums, pears, peaches, you can grow those in actually very confined space, in the sense of there's a process where you can put three trees in one hole. So you can put three apples in one hole, and you can have an apple producing early season, mid season, and late season. So you always have an apple. So they don't need a lot of space. And there's actually people that will graft apples and pears and different trees on the same tree itself. So you always have something in production. And I really do think that's a great way to go in case you're looking for a space saving, because let's be real. If you have one apple tree, you're not eating all those apples.
Right.
You're not eating all those peaches. You're not eating all those pears. So why not make it where you have a limited tree space, but you get a few apples throughout the whole year? You're going to use those a lot more. So there are some techniques when it comes to stone fruits. They can be in there's a lot of varieties that are dwarf nowadays that can be in a whiskey barrel size container. So, you know, if you're looking for something on a patio or a porch or small area, there are some dwarf stone fruit trees. But like I said, if you're looking for a confined space and you only have a few feet to spare for your fruit trees, you can fit them in a hole. Now, if you are growing a citrus, you know, that's a different story. Citrus trees, if you're in a confined space, I would just recommend putting them in something the size of a half whiskey barrel and keeping them in that, because that's going to really restrict the growth. You're going to be able to maximize that. And if you're a lemon eater, you will never be able to eat all the lemons on that dwarf citrus that it produces. Lemons are ever-bearing, and so it just means they're constantly in and out of production. And I have a lemon tree in my backyard, and I am constantly giving away lemons. So, you know, lemons are very specific. But if you're an orange or a mandarin or a lime, those are seasonal. And so you got to be a little bit more cautious with that. But nonetheless, when the tree gets to mature size, I don't know of any family, unless it's a family of 10 or 12, that's going to use up all that citrus on that tree. So there's a lot of great ways to use fruit trees in a small environment, whether they be stone fruits or citrus, and they'll make it work. And if you're in the Midwest or areas where it does freeze, you know, I just took a trip to England not too long ago, and they have these things called orangeries. They're basically big indoor greenhouses where they move their citrus in for the wintertime. And, you know, maybe you don't have an orangery, but you do have an area that maybe you can move that citrus tree inside a front room that gets a lot of light, or a greenhouse. And that's the nice thing about keeping them in containers, is that you can still get citrus, but you just have to move them into a controlled environment through the wintertime.
Fantastic. So we've really enjoyed having you on the program. How can people find out more about you and your radio show?
Well, you know, thank you so much for having me on the program. And, you know, it's always fun to talk gardening with people and talk gardening with people all around the country. So, you know, we love people visit gardenamerica.com. We do air our show on Saturday mornings, and we start at 8:15 Pacific time normally. But on our Facebook, we have old programs where we've already taped them. And, you know, there's all kinds of topics that we kind of cover and kind of go from there. But if you want to see a list of them, go to gardenamerica.com.
Well, Tiger, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered Holly and myself and all of our listeners. And we thank you for that and the education which you've provided all of us.
Oh, thank you guys. I mean, it's been my pleasure. I love chatting gardening. So anytime you guys want to talk, just give me a ring, okay?
Absolutely.
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.